Good morning, Hopkins Jr. Hi, glad to hear your wind ensemble today. We've already heard Mr. Conway with the orchestra, so I'm excited to hear how you guys are doing, because the orchestra played great. You look good. You look like you're ready. The funny thing, there's a difference between band students and orchestra students. While the band is out there, I see like half a dozen of you sort of, I don't know if it's anxious or just energy, tapping your legs and, you know, that sort of thing, ready to go. Orchestra kids tend to come out and they just sort of sit completely still. It's almost scary, so I'm glad to see your energy. Anyway, I'm looking forward to your program, especially hearing the Lauda at the beginning, mostly because the composer, Tim Miles, is a good friend of mine. Tim and I both took conducting lessons together long before he was a composer, and so I'm glad to really see his work coming back. I hope you enjoy it too. So I just want to point out, while I was talking there, they introduced the three adjudicators, and I'm pretty sure I got the loudest applause. So I hope you enjoy my comments more than any of the others.
The Willows of Winter by B.J. Brooks and A Longford Legend by Robert Sheldon. Longford Legend is three movements of the Savior, Boz, and Tulliverian.
All right, I'll tell you what I'm looking forward to at the very beginning of your performance is this fortissimo, shortissimo note that's going to really get things started in a vigorous kind of fashion. So, let's see if the performance measures up to the kind of expectation I'm after. Just something to be aware of when you're playing in a wind ensemble. Percussion always have a lot of stuff to do back there, right? They're always going to be fidgeting around. So those of you sitting in the front row, let them do a thing. You don't have to turn around and watch them and make them nervous and uncomfortable. They'll get ready when they're ready. Great. All right, let's start with a bang. Pretty good. I think that can be a shorter note that just goes... So all of these little lines, dug-a-dig-a-dum, dug-a-dig-a-dum, I think can start a little bit more aggressively. We have a tendency to sort of sneak into them and go la-la-la-la-la, and I think you can start, the string equivalent, we would say, start from the string with this vigorous dug-a-dig-a-dum, and that's going to keep the energy of the piece going. Because right now these little runs, it's not that you're late, it's not that you're dragging, it's just that the articulation on the beginning of them isn't clean enough. To make them sound like they're part of the tempo that the drummers are laying down in the back. A little bit of a balance problem here. Between the ride cymbal and the claves actually are almost burying the rest of the band. It's hard from the back to judge that kind of dynamic, but when you hear the recording, I hope you'll recognize it. Something you might want to do, when you rehearse, percussionists especially, is record rehearsals, and then later, when you're working on homework or whatever, just have the rehearsal on and be kind of aware of your balance. Because I know it's really hard to understand your balance from the very back of the band unless the band director tells you all the time, louder, softer, etc. But here, yeah, the ride cymbal, I mean, you're playing the heck out of it. It's just a little bit too loud. Same deal. I think percussion is still just sort of overbalanced. And I know a different hall, and you're right next to the back wall, which helps project your sound out. But this section could be a lot more mysterious if we just got the balance right. Those of you playing the very long pedal tones, I appreciate the way you're staying out of the way. That's done well. I've got some intonation stuff on this chorale. We need to, in rehearsal, sing through it. Ba-da-dee-da. The other thing to look at, like when we're back at measure 82, ba-da-dee-da, and then there's a crescendo printed in measure 83, and then there's a rest in 84. That crescendo needs to start at 82 and go all the way to 90. It's not just for the four beats in measure 83. When a composer writes the word cresc, it's got this kind of long overall kind of sound. And so you need to think about carrying that line through. So that it's constantly growing and building and not just happening for two measures at a time. That crescendo that happens into measure 111, it had a certain awkwardness to it. That, yeah, we got louder, and then 111 just kind of happened. I would say that the whole buildup from measure 106 into 111 needs to be constantly building, growing, building, growing, building, growing, and then bang, so that it connects to 111 and keeps everything exciting. Those of you playing the repeated notes, measure 132, go more for the accents and then get the heck out of the way on everything else, right? So, so then when you it becomes much more exciting instead of just a pile of notes over and over. That's played pretty well. I think the last three, four measures, you can connect the phrasing more. I know they look like isolated notes, and so it looks like you just play pong, gong, 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 gong. But if you think about how they make a phrase over that rhythm that goes ding, da, ding, da, ding, and it keeps building, da, boom, boom, then you're going to have a much more effective and thrilling kind of ending instead of just isolated notes. Cool piece, if I do say so myself. I'll send Mr. Miles an email and say that I heard Hopkins play the heck out of Lauda. A little bit of trepidation about the very first two eighth notes, right? That they had just kind of a timidity to them. I think that's because you're thinking them as the start of the melody. I think the start of the melody is on the downbeat of the first full measure. And so if you think of those eighth notes as just serving as a way to get to the downbeat as then they become less scary by themselves. I know as a band, when we play soft and slow things, we tend to be afraid of those opening articulations. If you think about where each note is going, then the articulation is just something that serves the music. I will say the beginning of that chord in brass was, right there was fantastic. All right, so here at letter A, you've got lots of diminuendos and crescendos, and then you've got tenutos here. I think you need to think a little bit more about the overall shape of the long line, so that when we're at letter A, big thick sound through the whole first measure, right? And then be very gentle. We take a breath, we come back in measure 13, we grow, and the strong point of that phrase needs to be the downbeat of measure 14. That's why the tenuto is there at measure 14, that we go and we crescendo into that place. What happened in the way you performed it was you played a little crescendo and it got kind of just vaguely louder without any real direction. Composers write crescendos and diminuendos for definite reasons. And as sensitive musicians, it's our job to think about what those reasons are. And in this case, it's because, B.J. Brooks really wants a strong downbeat at measure 14. And that tenuto there means that that note has weight and that we really love that note and we go for it. The thing that I'll say you're doing really well is flexibility of tempo in a piece like this. Mr. Conway is a fantastic teacher and an excellent conductor and a great musician, and that was very evident with the way the orchestra played today. So go ahead and trust him and be flexible, especially at the ends of phrases. Very few junior high bands are playing the ends of phrases as beautifully as you are with that much sensitivity. So congrats there. You should be very proud of it. Bravo to the clarinet solo here. Think about where the crescendo is going. We tend to play the crescendo here that peaks at the top of the written G, and then it kind of falls away. But if you look at the crescendo and where it's actually printed, it should all go all the way to the downbeat of the next measure. So between measure 36 and 37, the crescendo should be constant. Da da dee da dee da da da, and then it really falls on the written F sharp there. And that will help shape your phrase in a way that makes the solo feel not so long. And makes the music more interesting. Just some intonation things here. We're running a little bit sharp in trumpets. Yeah, so I think we had a missed opportunity there, leading before letter F. With the breath mark, that the crescendo should continue to grow, then we take a breath, and then we start a new phrase. And instead, we had a crescendo that kind of petered out somewhere in measure 50, and then it missed the new beginning that we should have at letter F. All of those little tiny details, where the crescendo peaks and where the breath marks are written, make a huge difference in a slow piece like this. About why the grace note is there for many of you in measure 52. To think about what that note would sound like if the grace note were not there, and then try to figure out why is this composer sticking this grace note in there. It's not just because they feel like using a little more ink on the page. I think it's because the composer wants that note to be the strong note of the phrase. And by putting the grace note there, it draws attention to it. But the way we played it, made it feel like the grace note was awkward. Instead, think about why the grace note is there and go for it, so that when at the top of the phrase you play, and that's the big strong note, and then we fall away from there. Yeah, your patience in slow pieces like this is very good. The way you're willing to stretch the end of a phrase, the way nobody rushes through anything without any sense of subdivision or ensemble, I think is really, really great and very much to be commended. Happy to hear it. So, as a matter of contrast, right, you just played very sensitively, very slowly, and very flexibly, and now you've got, a bunch of British stuff, and we need to be jauntily playing at the very beginning. So can you make this huge transition from something that was slow, sensitive, lovely, to something now that's going to be very joyful, jaunty, short? Completely different kind of sound. Can you be chameleons like that, that you can separate yourselves from the way you just played to the way you're going to play a different piece? That's what I'm looking for in band performance, is that variety of sound. It got a start that was a little timid, right? It kind of went, and instead, you need to be performers right from the beginning, right? To think about how this is a completely different sound, and we want a sound that's going to have really short notes, and then go big for that sforzando, that sort of thing, right? And that's hard to do after you just played a long, slow, quiet piece to now play a short, fast, lively piece and make them sound completely different. Yeah, saxes can go much more for the accents, right? He puts the accents here on the short notes on B2. Beam, buddy, and beam, ba-ba-bee. And that's what gives the sound an accent that's going to be much more Scottish or Irish, is that bum buddy, that without that kind of accent, the piece is sort of generic. We're missing all the sforzandos, right? The way you're playing is technically correct, but musically missing. It's missing all of the excitement of the sforzandos and the accents, which means that you can play a lot of stuff less loud and think bum ba da 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 ding bang pa, and then go explosively on the sforzandos. Something that gives the audience a way to feel the way that this is really meant to be a dance, and it's meant to be a vigorous, exciting dance with skirts flying and with, you know, dust kicking up off the floor and that kind of sound. And if you don't really go for the accents and go for the articulations, then it sounds just sort of generically British. It could be a march, it could be a dance, it could be a folk song. That was an opportunity to really go big. All right, so we've got some intonation, just, you know, there's some pain here in these first four measures. The thing to think about is, if it sounds out of tune while you're playing, always work to adjust yourself. Sometimes we get in the sense of, like, I checked my note with a tuner, I know I'm in tune. There is no right or wrong when it comes to intonation. It's either in tune or out of tune, and it's up to everybody to listen and adjust to one another all the time, especially if you've got a very long note. It's okay if the long note starts out of tune, but if it continues to be out of tune and ends out of tune, then that means somebody isn't listening and adjusting. Everybody should listen and everybody should adjust. Crescendo and diminuendo worked pretty well. Just a little bit of a balance problem. Flutes are hanging out a little bit too loud on all those dotted half notes while other solos are going on. Something to think about in any band piece is, if you've got long notes that are tied to others, you're probably already playing too loud and need to stay out of the way and let the melody shine. Trumpets, you need to think about the balance between the first trumpet part and second and third. When you're playing in unison, second and third trumpets need to be less loud than first. Let the first trumpet sort of lead. But if you're in octaves, then second and third trumpets need to be much louder than first. And that changes a whole bunch between measure 93 and 101, right? At 93, first trumpets are on your own, and then in measure 94 and 95, you're in octaves, and so the lower octave needs to be louder than the first. But then in the next two measures, you're in unison. And so you have to be constantly listening, adjusting, changing your balance, depending on whether you're in unison or octaves or thirds or fifths or whatever, so that you're always working to blend that sound. Yeah. So we still have
some sketchy intonation in flutes there between measure 104 and 105, right? There was a very long note that started out of tune, it was out of tune in the middle, and it was out of tune at the end. Again, it's okay to start out of tune, but you've got to keep listening and adjusting. In general, those who are out of tune were sitting a little bit underneath the pitch, so need to find your way back up into it. Listen to the chord, always adjust. Now the very last note started, you know, at like 80% tuning, and it finished by about 90%, and that's pretty good listening and adjusting there. There were just some places where the adjustment was missing earlier in the performance. Okay, clarinets, so be ready to sell a totally different style that's going to go, you know, fun, wild, and a little bit exciting. Again, make a huge contrast from the slow, soft stuff you just played. Pretty good. I would say that not every note needs to be the same volume as the note next to it. What you just played, bum bum ta ta di da dun da dun da dum, had sort of a blandness to it because every note was the same. But if you can think about, you know, the contour of the line and think some notes are actually more louder or more important than others, right? Bum bum ta ta di dun dum da dum da dum da di da da. Then you're going to get a sound that becomes much more joyful and interesting to listen to. Hey, that crescendo diminuendo that the band just did as a whole was actually really, really good, the transition into 134. I'm really happy with that. Pretty good trumpets. When you're playing a long line like that, make sure that you blow through the lines. Sometimes there was some breath support that quit at the end of notes, and so you get a sound that goes wah 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 wah. And instead, we went ha da dee da da. Right? Just blow through the nine, push the buttons, and let the buttons change the pitch. You'll be all right. At 2:16, there's a moment here that could be a really exciting moment, but it requires everybody to really think about what's happening there. So some of you have the da 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 da, right? And that's obviously an important part. But those with the dotted quarter notes at 2:16 need to think more about how your part lines up and how you can be more exciting and ta di ho da ta di ta ta, and how your part can help drive that crescendo, and how your articulation and the way you start the note and then get out of the way can help out the rest of the band to create that huge crescendo. I hope you're aware at 2:32 you're playing the Dies Irae. If Mr. Conway hasn't talked to you about the Dies Irae, look it up. There's got to be an interesting reason why the Dies Irae, the Latin chant for the dead, is suddenly in the middle of this folk tune at the end, right? Pretty well played and pretty exciting finish, which I'm happy about. Again, think about the way the crescendo at the end of the piece is leading towards something, right? It's leading toward a big, exciting finish so that you can finish in a way that sounds very intentional and not just like you ran out of notes at the end of the piece. Gary Hill, Dr. Hill's going to talk to you for a little while, so I'm going to turn off my recorder and write some nice things to you. I'm glad to hear you today.